take full responsibility for everything this government has been doing in tackling coronavirus, and I'm very proud of our record.
Tens of thousands of our citizens have died avoidably. These were unnecessary deaths because of systematic government misconduct.
With good British common sense, we will continue to defeat this virus and take this country forward.
There are a lot of green shoots of opportunity on the horizon. You know, we've been held down on the forest floor for far too long, and we will reach that canopy again.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Sebastian Salek.
And a very good afternoon. I'm Roger Hearing. Now, a second lockdown can't be ruled out. It wasn't what we got yesterday. That was rather more minor. But the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, is saying a second proper lockdown is possible. He's talking, of course, after the Prime Minister warned yesterday there are difficult months, 6 months it seems, to come for the UK. He's appealed to Britons to obey new restrictions and work from home where possible.
And to those who say we don't need this stuff and we should leave people to take their own risks, I say these risks are not our own. The tragic reality of having COVID is that your mild cough can be someone else's death knell.
Boris Johnson there appealing for unity in following the rules and tackling the virus. He told Parliament the restrictions could remain in place for 6 months, but we have heard from some MPs, particularly on his own backbenchers, that Parliament should have the ability to approve those new restrictions. Remember, a lot of these are secondary legislation, so it just comes straight from the government. Sir Graham Brady is one of those. He says ministers have got into the habit of ruling by decree. We put that earlier on to the chair of the Defence Select Committee, Tobias Elwood, who also tends to agree.
Parliament, I have to say, is getting nervous that we don't have a say. I'm minded to support the spirit of what Graham Brady is trying to achieve, to hold this government to account. We need to be able to see the data, have a greater situational awareness, so we can scrutinise that decision-making, which actually I think will be helpful to the country. You need the country's resolve and support to keep this together. Otherwise, I'm afraid that discipline falls down and the virus continues to spread.
Meanwhile, Labour says it supports the new restrictions, but it also says the government must do more to combat the virus and support business. The Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, spoke to Bloomberg TV earlier.
The first is ensuring we have a proper test, trace and isolate system. The government promised one that was world-beating. We would be happy with one that just functions right now because, frankly, the system is on the verge of collapse. Second, we need a package of economic support. An economic package is essential, and we've been calling for some months now for a flexible furlough scheme, something that the Bank of England governor also seems to be supporting. And third, we need local support for areas that are particularly badly affected.
That was the Shadow Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Rachel Reeves, speaking to Bloomberg TV earlier. I had to explain to an American colleague what that position meant. It was not easy, let me tell you that. But anyway, let's talk about all this with Alison Thewlis. She is the SNP Shadow Chancellor. Alison, I was looking at a YouGov poll that found that 45% of people think that Boris Johnson didn't go far enough yesterday. Scotland, admittedly, has gone slightly further. They've banned indoor visits to other households. But in general, do you think the whole of the UK needs tougher measures now?
I think the measures taken by the UK government have been incredibly confusing. When they were telling people that they should go back to work, that they shouldn't work from home, and now they're telling people that they should work from home. So they've been very confusing in the message that they're sending out. Whereas in Scotland, the First Minister has been very consistent in the messages that she's given out with the briefings that she's been giving to the public every day as well, with the public health experts at her side, making sure that everything that is known is given to the public straight away.
But I suppose the point in all this is timing, isn't it, Alison? Maybe the point at which we had a massive national lockdown, of course, right at the beginning of all this. Looking back, and obviously hindsight's easy, did we all come out of that much too early?
I think your point about hindsight being easy is really the key point here. People have done the best that they can with the basis of the information that they've had. But I think there is definitely some evidence to suggest that sending people back into offices and things like that has had an impact. Even things like the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, encouraging people going out to spend time in restaurants and pubs and bars, have had an impact as well. What the aims of that scheme were, it's had an impact in terms of spreading the virus as well. So I think there really needed to have been a more comprehensive thought-through plan from the UK government about the impact of each of these different things as lockdown eased.
And what about the timeline ahead? I mean, 6 months is the guidance we've been given from the Prime Minister. I understand that that caused quite a stir among some business leaders when they spoke to ministers. Do you think it feels realistic?
I think it's difficult to say how long this will last. And if you remember, people were saying it would be over by Easter, it would be over by the summer, that everything would be back to normal by the autumn. And I think we just can't tell. So I think we do need to be prepared for this. But what the UK government needs to do, they can't just say, oh, it'll be 6 months. They need to see what they're going to do to support businesses and individuals and families through this as well. So things like extending furlough, extending the self-employed support scheme, filling the gaps in the scheme, because remember, some people have had absolutely no money whatsoever. People who are freelance or limited company directors or new starters, they've had no money from the government and are really struggling. So the government needs to explain how they're going to support people if they think this is going to be a further 6 months.
Okay, well, I mean, let's dig into that a bit more. Would the SNP support a comprehensive extension of furlough, or like the Labour Party, very targeted? I mean, this is going to build up an awful lot of national debt, whichever way you look at it. So what's the best way to make sure it goes where it needs to?
I think it depends a little bit on how the virus goes, because if we expect things to be a comprehensive lockdown, then you do need to have a comprehensive extension to the furlough, because you're going to shut down lots of businesses again. You're going to make sure that people can't go into their work. And for some industries, that's really going to mean that people have to stay at home. You can't do some things, working from home at all. But there's definitely a need for a targeted approach to this. The Treasury Select Committee has looked at this issue in detail and feel that there's, for industries such as hospitality, such as the arts, they are not going to be able to return to any kind of normal anytime soon, and those people cannot go back to their work. So there is a real argument for people in those sectors, particularly your hospitality, tourism, the arts, those kinds of sectors, to have that targeted extension, because they are viable businesses. There's no doubt about that. They just can't trade at the moment because the government has said you cannot trade. So the government therefore has a responsibility to do something to make that gap.
And this time around, if we're talking about targeted measures, which is a marked difference, it must be said, from the first furlough scheme, do we then need to think about these so-called zombie companies, firms that aren't going to survive the pandemic, and therefore it's a waste of taxpayers' money to be funding them now?
Well, I think what we need to remember is we're not necessarily funding the companies, we're funding the employees of those companies. We're keeping them afloat. They're helping them to put food on the table, to pay their bills, to pay their mortgage. And if you're to pull the rug from under those people, there's a wider economic impact. So if you pull the rug completely, and then you have tens of thousands of people defaulting on their mortgage, for example, that's a huge economic impact that has, and a societal impact as well, I would argue. So there needs to be a careful consideration of, if you're going to put the money in, it goes to those individuals and it helps support them. If you don't do it through the furlough scheme, you'll have to do it through the benefits scheme. You're going to have to give them unemployment benefits until they get back to work. So there will be a cost one way or another, and it's for the government to decide really whether it thinks that money is better spent in furlough and keeping people in jobs or in paying unemployment benefits. And I think keeping people in jobs and the link to their employers for when business picks back up again, I think that is a more important and more worthwhile spending of that money.
But Alison, you're talking about a cost, and many people, I'm sure, in Scotland and elsewhere will be thinking about the longer-term cost. None of this is cost-free in terms of building up a national debt that will have to be paid at some time, and obviously interest rates are very low, that's for sure. But this has to be borne in mind, doesn't it?
It does. There's this wider societal public health impact, and that doesn't come cost-free as well. So I think the point about this being a kind of almost like it's been talked of almost like the Second World War debt. It is there, it can be paid down eventually in time. But if you don't do anything, if you don't support people through this, the wider economic scarring will be much more significant.
And what about the rather unique system we've had throughout all of this, whereby each member of the union, each country in the United Kingdom, has managed this separately? Do you think that that has worked as a good model, or do we need to be working more in tandem to have a more uniform policy that is potentially less confusing?
Only confusing if you want to feel that it is. I haven't found it particularly confusing. I've been listening to the messages from the Scottish Government. They've been very, very clear. And people have understood broadly what their responsibilities are and what they're able to do. And I think it's perfectly correct that the devolved nations have the right to manage their public health, because that is a devolved competence. But there's been close cooperation between health ministers, between all of the governments of the United Kingdom. And I think that's important that where there is cooperation, people don't understand what's happening and what the kind of outlook is. I think that's important. So where it has fallen down is perhaps where measures have been brought in, you know, like the furlough scheme, people are calling for it, but it gets announced in an announcement rather than being something that everybody understands exactly how that's going to work. So I think there needs to be more collaboration right across government, not just in public health, but in all of the different government departments, to make sure that everyone understands exactly what their responsibilities are in those different departments as well.
But briefly, Alison, in the end, I mean, what this has done, I guess, for you guys, is point out that you can run things in a way that obviously advances your own agenda, which is Scottish nationalism, which is independence. That's really what it's about, isn't it?
Well, I think if you listen to the things that the First Minister has said, and the kind of political arguments are further from what, you know, further from her mind at the moment. She's been concentrating on the public health side of things. And I think what people have seen, and what I'm picking up from my constituents, is that they've been watching the UK government, they've been watching the Scottish government, and they have put more trust in the Scottish government because the messages have been consistent, the behaviour has been consistent. We haven't had things to the same extent of Dominic Cummings, for example, going for an eyesight test and all the Tabarra Castle and all of this nonsense. Those things really eroded trust in the UK government and the UK government's message, as well as the lack of clarity about work from home, don't work from home, go to the pub, don't do this. And it's been very, very unclear from the UK government and quite chaotic, whereas the Scottish government have been very clear, very consistent, and putting that messaging out consistently as well.
Let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. We start with the Chancellor, who is said to be drawing up plans for a new programme to subsidise workers' wages. We referred to it briefly in the first part of the programme, but this is a Financial Times report that cites people briefed on the matter, and it says that the Treasury is looking at schemes in France, Germany and Spain that help companies that can't bring back employees on a full-time basis. So looking to the continent for some inspiration there, and a lot of those countries, in fact, I think all of them in that list, have extended their furlough significantly beyond the end point. So a bit of inspiration there for the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, as he looks to see what happens at the end of October.
And they do need inspiration at the moment, particularly those businesses that really feel hung out to dry by the latest changes. And of course, many of them are in the hospitality area. Fresh pressure then on Rishi Sunak to set out how the government intends to protect jobs and help businesses. The biggest blow likely to be felt, of course, by the hospitality industry. Kate Nicholls, who's chief executive of the trade body UK Hospitality, is calling for an immediate and exhaustive package of financial support.
Well, this will be devastating for trade. We've still got one in five premises closed, 900,000 people still supported by full furlough, which is coming to an end in a matter of weeks. And a 10 p.m. curfew means that businesses have to be empty, closed and locked up by 10 p.m. That means last orders at 9. So it halves restaurant revenues. It decimates pub sector trade, particularly on top of the other measures that have also been announced. So it would put a lot of jobs at risk.
Well, that sentiment's being echoed by the CBI, the Federation of Small Businesses, and also the Resolution Foundation. Now, that think tank says the phasing in of restrictions to control the virus while simultaneously phasing out support for firms and workers is just not sustainable.
Yeah, it's starting to seem more and more unified, that voice against extending furlough. Meanwhile, the chief medical officer believes that further restrictions to battle the virus are inevitable. This is according to today's Times, which reports that Chris Whitty told Boris Johnson that England is likely going to have to follow Scotland in imposing a ban on visiting between households. The paper also says that Whitty doesn't think the 10 p.m. curfew for pubs and restaurants are going to bring the epidemic under control. The paper says that the policy was not recommended by scientific advisers and was instead an imitation of a similar policy in Belgium, which was based on evidence that drunk people were spreading the virus. I'm sure they're spreading many other things to boot.
Yes, and I think someone suggested that if they're all thrown out at exactly the same time of the pubs onto the streets, that may actually make things rather worse. But there is a fresh warning about something else now, Brexit. The government says exporters to the EU face queues of as many as 7,000 lorries in Kent and two-day delays to trade after the Brexit transition period finishes at the end of the year. Imports will also be disrupted in January, and this is all in a letter from the Cabinet Office Minister Michael Gove to the freight industry. The government's stressed this isn't a forecast, but Michael Gove is responsible for no-deal planning, and he's due to outline what he calls the reasonable worst-case scenario when he speaks to the House of Commons later.
Yeah, still a bit early to draw conclusions, but it is a scary figure, isn't it? And then we've got a final story for you. This company that was infamously contracted by Chris Grayling to run ferries in the case of a no-deal Brexit. We all remember that. It had no ships, it turned out, and now it's gone bust. Seaborne Freight, it's called. went into liquidation earlier this month, owes almost £2 million, mainly to creditors. So just another twist in the long-running story that is Chris Grayling and his political career.
But let's talk about the restrictions which are dominating the coverage here in Britain. The big unanswered question is how far the government is bringing the people with them on this. Is Britain prepared to knuckle down to deal with these very big restrictions on their lives once again? Well, the opinion pollsters Kantar have been doing some research on this. Joining us now is Dr. Michelle Harrison, who's global CEO at Kantar Public. Dr. Harrison, it's a fascinating moment, I suppose, to really say, how do the British people think about this? What is their view of the new restrictions? I mean, are these too fast, too slow, too much, too little? What are you sensing?
Well, good morning. And again, extraordinary times to be discussing. So at the moment, with the government, there are two big balancing acts in terms of bringing the population with them. So the first is the one we've discussed before, you know, about the balance between focusing on people's health and focusing on the economy. And then there's this other one that's now really starting to come through and was a big part, really, of what the Prime Minister addressed yesterday. And it's that balance between this feeling of we're all in it together versus a more individualistic stance, which is about asking the vulnerable to shield themselves. So let's start with the second. And broadly, you know, the people are still behind the government stance, but the numbers we're seeing now are nothing like the numbers we saw back in April and May when we were at the height of the first wave of the pandemic. So overall support, 64% for this idea that we're all in it together and we should be doing all of the right things to protect everyone. But I think, you know, the if we think about how that's changed, we've still got very high figures for the support of lockdowns, but it is dropping fast, dropping 10 to 15% just over a month. And if we look specifically at this issue of local lockdowns and the rule of six, the key issue that we're seeing coming through that we haven't seen before is quite a fast drop in belief that these measures actually work. And we're talking about now only, I mean, just over half believe a lockdown, even a local lockdown, will work. And I think that's where the government now has got its greatest risk.
That's certainly something I'm starting to hear more of, anecdotally speaking, but a very difficult problem for the government if that belief starts to slip even further. What about jobs? Because, I mean, we're heading into a phase where we could see more job losses on the board. Are people getting increasingly concerned about that prospect?
So absolutely. I mean, I think the way in which this will now play out is going to be something between the balance of fear for the disease and the belief in whether or not the measures can work and the balance of fear for the economy. And when we look at the level of fear for the disease, still really high, you know, three quarters of the population fearing a second wave. But when we look at what's happening on the economy, we are seeing these shifts. 35% of the population are reporting to us they felt economic impact. That's highly concentrated in the under 35s. That group fear the disease a little less. So that's where you're going to start to see, you know, a lot of pushback on that. So I think, you know, depending on what happens now with the Chancellor, with the next wave of protection, you're going to see increasing challenges. And we've also seen quite a significant increase in the numbers of people, the proportions who are saying they want the government to move faster to get the economy back to normal. Still not yet half the population, but growing quickly every month.
Yeah, that really is fascinating, this balance between those two priorities, which, you know, we tax politicians with, of course, and the public clearly moving on that issue. But one very interesting thing I thought was to do with the balance on that also between schools and, I don't know, say pubs or whatever. The government saying schools must stay open, but people saying, well, maybe pubs also should have a role in this, or restaurants or bars or night clubs or whatever it is. Where is the balance in that as far as most people are concerned?
So honestly, I think there is complete sympathy in the public for people whose jobs are on the line over this. So there is no lack of sympathy for that, but there is complete clarity that keeping schools open is the most important thing. So we've got, you know, high 60s in terms of saying that should be the overall priority against everything else. So that's still a pretty high figure. I think where the government are starting to lose people, it isn't so much about them wanting to do the right thing. It's actually about clarity of understanding what that is. So we only got, you know, 50% of people tell us they understand what it is that's truly being asked of them. And that's where we've got difficulties. It's not amongst people being able to prioritise. Are schools more important than other things? Yes, that's pretty clear. But it's secondly, what is it I'm being asked to do and will it work? And once you've got a sort of failing of clarity around what the request is and whether or not you believe it will be effective, then you've got challenges with bringing people with you.
And what about when we eventually get a vaccine? I saw something about France and how people are increasingly sceptical about getting a vaccine and about whether it would work. Are people here likely to push back when we get to that point?
I mean, honestly, these figures I do find extraordinary. Last week we had only 35% of British people saying they would definitely get a vaccine. And this is when we've got, 75% saying they're scared of a second wave of the disease. If you ask, might you consider it, you get the number to two-thirds. But that, we're still left with a whole third of the population saying they're not expecting to have a vaccine when it becomes available. So, I mean, there's an enormous amount of work to do there. But if we think that the government is starting to lose the population around them believing in the effectiveness of the measures that are being asked to take around rule of six or around lockdowns, we've also got this big climb in terms of people signing up for a vaccine when it's available.
And finally, Michelle, we shouldn't forget, of course, the Brexit issue, which we've spoken to you on many times before. Of course, it is still there in the background. How confident are people about the way the government's handling that, given the way things have gone in the last few weeks?
So the only news I can give you on that is more than half think that negotiations are being handled badly. And, that shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, overall we're seeing, aren't we, the lead that the Conservatives had of, 26 points in the polls last April. I mean, that's just a very, very distant memory now. In our voting intention work, they've dropped another 2 points since August. So we've now got the Tories at 40, Labour at 36. And this actually polling was done just before Keir Starmer's speech, and there we're already up 3 points. So next few weeks will be very, very interesting on a range of things, Brexit being one of them, but overall the sort of party political is playing out.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.